hung open, and he stared at the board as if he were tracing all of the steps that had led to his doom. I stood and cracked my back. I don't know why you keep trying, Dr. Carmouche.
Someday I must beat her. It is simply the law of averages, no?
He rubbed his forehead, still staring at the board.
Confirmed, checkmate.
York. Elma York.
Parker gripped the ball he'd been tossing in one hand and beckoned me with the other. The harsh light of the comm desk threw heavy shadows under his brows. Helen and I exchanged glances before I crossed the room to Parker. Nathaniel, still on his call, watched me with enough intensity that the room started to heat up. I put on my most careful, neutral face and stopped in front of Parker. Yes?
Hang on.
Having called me over, he now made me wait as he listened, nodding at something one of the other astronauts said. I stood, resisting the urge to brush my skirt smooth, fidget with my hands, or do anything, really, but wait. Nathaniel's gaze still burned to the right side of my body, but I didn't turn to look at him.
Got it. Elle se tient ici.
Away, away. Vous et moi à la fois.
He released the talk button on the mic and sat back in the chair. The ball flew up from his grasp and smacked back down into his palm.
Le bourgeois' wife is doing all the American things. So their daughter is in a Girl Scout troop, and they want you to come talk to them.
I blinked a couple of times before I found my voice. Me?
Yeah, they formed a lady astronaut club. I figured they would want an actual astronaut, but girls, huh? Kind of adorable that they want to talk to you.
He grinned, showing his dimples, as if that helped.
You'll do it, right?
There is no possible way to say no to an astronaut who is sitting atop what is essentially a giant bomb. Even if I spoke French and could rip the microphone off of Parker, I couldn't decline. I smiled. Sure. I'd be happy to do that. Just tell me when. Parker turned back to the mic and rattled off more French.
Elle va le faire. Mais Dieu sait ce qu'elle va parler. Les bébés dans l'espace. Les femmes, eh?
Then he listened for a moment before he turned back to me.
His wife is watching from the roof. If you could go chat with her after the launch, she'd appreciate it. It'll distract his daughter while he's in space.
Sure, gladly. The thing was that I didn't resent Le Bourgeois' wife or his daughter, or even him, for that matter. If it were me, I would be thinking of everything I could possibly do to distract Nathaniel and make him more comfortable. It was just Parker and his shit-eating smugness. Yes, yes, he was the first man into space. Yes, he was a damn good pilot and, in fact, very brave. But he was also a self-serving schmuck. Soon as I'm finished, I'll head up to the family area.
Great.
He grinned again, all dazzling white teeth.
See if that husband of yours will tell you what's holding us up.
I'm sure he'll tell us as soon as we're clear. I glanced at Nathaniel, who had begun massaging his right temple. That was not a good sign. And how's your wife? Parker looked down and rolled the ball along the table.
Better. Thank you.
That was not the response that I had expected. I was sorry she couldn't make the Wargan dinner.
Well, maybe next time, hmm?
He cleared his throat.
You were going to check with your husband. About the launch?
Of course. That was not my job. Of course, my actual job required a rocket to be launched, so I had something to track and compute. I brushed off my skirt and swung away, heading toward Nathaniel. If nothing else, it gave me an excuse to talk to him. My husband had stopped writing anything, but still gripped the pencil in one hand hard enough that his knuckles had turned white. His jaw was set. He stared at the desk while Clemens paced behind him. Clemens saw me approached and snatched the cigar from his mouth.
What?
Colonel Parker has some questions for you, Director Clemens. It was at best tangential to the truth, but he'd be better able to answer Parker's questions about the launch than Nathaniel would. Clemens stalked off in response without actually acknowledging me. My poor husband seemed in danger of stabbing himself with his pencil, and I couldn't touch him. Not at work without making everything more complicated for both of us. I stood for a moment, wishing I could rub the tension out of his neck as he nodded and grunted in response to whoever was on the other end of the line. Taking a breath, I turned and walked back to my station. There was nothing I could do for Nathaniel, and, under the circumstances, I was a distraction. Carmouche was putting his chess pieces back in their case. He looked up as I rejoined the table and leaned in close. In a hushed voice, he said,
"That Colonel Parker, he does not like you very much."
"I know." I tucked my skirts under me as I sat. "Helen, I'll come to the 99s this weekend if you'll promise to fly with me so I don't have to share the Cessna with someone I don't know."
I'll.
Her grin of triumph did the translation, and I couldn't help smiling back.
"Ha!"
Nathaniel straightened.
"We've worked around the automatic cutoff. Start the clock again and tell Maloof his prayers worked. Let's light this candle."
18.
"Algerian French kill 3 in riot." By Michael Clark. Special to the National Times. Algiers, Algeria. August 22nd, 1956. Riots flared in Algiers today as thousands of Frenchmen demonstrated during the funeral of Amédée Froger, chairman of the Algerian Mayors Federation. He was assassinated by an anti-space terrorist yesterday.
Betty volunteered to come with me to meet the Girl Scout troop that Les Bourgeois' daughter belonged to, which was great because I was scared senseless. Betty was thrilled about the great publicity and had been gushing since we'd met at my place, imagining headlines with her hands spread wide like she was cupping the words.
"Lady astronaut meets astronaut's daughter."
She laughed and swung on the streetcar's pole.
"I wish you'd let me bring a photographer."
I reached for the pole cord on the streetcar. "This is our stop." The doors opened and I trotted down the steps to the street. "First, please stop calling me that. I'm not an astronaut."
"That's what the public calls you."
She hopped down next to me, coat pulled tight against the wind. "Yes, but I haven't been into space, and it's disrespectful of the men who have." I pulled the address out of my purse and steered us down the street.
"Whoa, Elma."
Betty put up her hands in mock surrender.
"I thought you were the one who was all keen to get women into space."
"I am, but that doesn't mean I want a title I haven't earned." We were meeting the Girl Scouts in the common room at a Catholic church in a newer part of Kansas City I didn't usually visit. The broad streets had modern buildings with narrow windows and low, thick walls. Half of them probably had several stories below ground, in the fashion that had become popular right after the meteor hit. Idiots. They were building for an impact that would never come. At least the floors below ground would be fairly easy to cool. The church itself was easy to spot from several blocks away, from its red brick facade and the thrust of its bell tower. Given the number of cars parked outside, it clearly had some sort of event going on. Likely a wedding, which was nice. Right after the meteor, there had been a trend toward free love as a sort of reaction to Doomsday. It was good that people were still getting married, since it meant that they weren't as scared about the future. On the other hand, if people were becoming complacent about the planet's future, that was a different sort of problem.
"Don't be mad."
Betty grabbed my arm.
"Just smile. You've got a great smile."
"What are you?" The sidewalk next to the church was filled with reporters. Sweat drenched my back and ran down my inner arms. If Betty hadn't had a hold of my arm, I would have probably made a run for it. My stomach heaved and I had to swallow hard to keep from hurling on the spot.
"Smile, Elma."
She kept her grip on my arm and spoke through a fixed smile of her own.
"We need this."
"I didn't even want a photographer and you arranged this?" I wrenched my arm free, heart hitting my ribs like a punching bag. Any moment now, I was going to cry, and that was monumentally unfair. I was angry, damn it. I turned my back on the reporters.
"You can't walk away. Elma. Elma. The little girls are coming out. Elma, you can't leave them. There's an astronaut's daughter here, and her daddy is in...
Damn it." Mr. Les Bourgeois' daughter had asked me to come because her father was in space and she was scared. God damn it! So I turned to face the cameras and all the expectations and 8 little girls, all wearing cardboard and tinfoil space helmets.
"Elma, please don't be mad."
Betty stayed by my side, talking through a smile.
"Please, I knew you'd say no, and you're so good on camera. Please don't be mad."
I gave her my brightest, most Stetson Parker smile.
"Well, bless your heart. Why would I be mad?"
One little girl. I was here for one little girl.
I tried my damnedest to block out the cameras and the men shouting for us to look at them and smile. One little girl. Her name was Claire LeBourgeois, and her daddy was in space. I could keep from throwing up for long enough to reassure her that he was coming home.
14 days after they went into space, LeBourgeois, Cleary, and Malouf safely returned to the ground. They hadn't accomplished all of their objectives, but they'd proven the main point that the lunar module would sustain life long enough for an exploratory moon mission. That just left it up to us to get them there. Sitting at my shared desk with Basira, I tried to ignore the constant bouncing that the engineer next to us was doing. I'd offered him a chair when he came in, but he was too eager. Resting my head on my left hand, I tried to surreptitiously rub my temple while studying the figures that Clarence, Bubbles, Bobienski had brought from the latest engine test. I'd been on the radio this morning before work, and getting up 2 hours earlier had left me with a headache that ran from my left eye, over my scalp, and down to the base of my neck. I was fairly certain it wasn't fatigue that was the problem, though. Bubbles, this doesn't make sense.
I know!
He jabbed a finger, raw with chewed cuticles, at the paper.
That's why I want you to go over the calculations!
I shook my head, running the tip of my pencil over the machine-generated numbers. It's not an error in calculation.
Please, that machine adds wrong if the temperature is over 65.
The cuffs of his shirt were smudged gray with pencil lead.
I need a Computress.
As a group, we hated that nickname. Lifting my gaze, I fixed him with a dead stare that I'd learned from Mrs. Rogers. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see that Helen had done the same. You need a computer. He waved my correction away.
Can you help me?
I am. I'm telling you that there are no errors in the calculations. So it's either an error in the initial data set or you've found a spectacularly effective engine arrangement. It was possible that going to a star pattern in the middle of the solid propellant could lead to a more efficient burn ratio. In fact, this structure reminds me of a theory that Harold James Poole had.
Yes!
He bounced on his toes, and behind him, Myrtle covered her mouth to stifle a laugh. There was a reason he had the nickname Bubbles among the computers.
See, that's why I need you doing this, because you understand. That contraption doesn't. I mean, great Scott, you've got a PhD!
That was the first time my degree had come up at work since I was hired. Mrs. Rogers knew my credentials, of course, but after our interview, I'm not sure I ever mentioned it, even when trying to make a point. I guess he watched Mr. Wizard or listened to ABC Headline Edition. It wasn't as if it made me a better computer, and trotting it out always sounded like posturing. I mean, anyone with a background in physics would have been just as capable of the type of work we did, and several of the women in the computer department didn't have college degrees at all. My degree is irrelevant here. I flipped back through the pages that Bubbles had brought me. Do you have the raw data?
Of course!
He shrugged as if I'd asked a stupid question. I waited, smiling at him, until he snapped and pointed both fingers at me.
Oh, you need it. Right, got it. It's over in the lab. I should go get that. I'll go get that.
Thank you. I stacked the pages on my desk as he bounded out of the room, tie flapping with each step. The moment he was out of the room, giggles escaped from almost every desk. We loved Bubbles, but oh, he could be such an engineer sometimes. We had a saying, engineers caused problems, computers solved them. Bubbles? Perfect example of the type. Basira pushed back her chair and jumped up, bouncing from one foot to the other. With an exaggerated American accent, she kept bouncing like Bubbles.
I need a computress! Lord help me, I need a computress!
Bless his heart. I laughed and rested against the back of my chair. He means well.
Oof, harsh words.
Myrtle left her desk and came over to join us.
But seriously, what do the numbers look like?
I slid the paper over to her so she could flip through it. Helen appeared at her elbow, head tilted to the side as she studied the printed output.
Something must have been mistranscribed on the punch cards.
That's why I wanted the raw data, which really, how hard is it to figure out that you need to bring that with you? Nathaniel came into the computer room. The giggles stopped and everyone returned to work mode. He was my husband, but he was also the lead engineer. I winked at Helen as she returned to her seat, then turned to give him my full attention. His mouth was compressed in a narrow line, and a muscle bunched at the corner of his jaw. Between his brows, concentration furrows had appeared. He had a magazine rolled up in one hand and was slapping it against his thigh as he walked.
Elma, may I speak with you? In my office.
Of course. Exchanging a look with Basira, I slid my chair back from my desk. If Bubbles returns before I'm back, will you just tell him to leave the raw data on my desk? As I followed Nathaniel out of the computer room, the other women did a pretty poor job of pretending not to stare at us. Nathaniel's back was rigid, and his strides ate up the length of the corridor that led to his office. My heels clattered against the linoleum as I hurried after him. Nathaniel held the door to the office for me, staring at the floor. That muscle in his jaw kept clenching and unclenching, and my heart seemed to be joining it in a race. The last time I'd seen Nathaniel this furious was when he had fired Leroy Pluckett for grabbing one of the computers. The usual organized chaos dominated his office. The blackboard on one wall had been filled with what looked like equations for a lunar orbit, which made sense, given the next phase of the space project. Nathaniel shut the door carefully so it barely made any sound. He strode across the room and tossed the magazine on his desk. It unrolled as it hit. The issue of life I had been in. I wasn't on the cover, thank God. But there was a one-page write-up about my Girl Scout appearance. At some point, I was going to forgive Betty for ambushing me. Maybe. She didn't understand how much being the center of attention terrified me, but that didn't stop me from feeling panicked that she would pull a stunt like that again, especially with how thrilled she'd been because her story had made it to a national market. Nathaniel loosened his tie, still staring at the floor.
Oma, I'm furious. It's not at you, but it's going to sound like it is.
That sounds ominous. I sank into the chair near his desk, hoping it would inspire him to do the same. He grunted, sweeping his hand over his hair, and then just stood there, with one hand on his hip and the other gripping the back of his neck.
It's fucking stupid.
Nathaniel! I think that reaction is a permanent imprint from my mother.
Fucking stupid.
He turned and glared at me.
I have just spent the last fucking hour in the office of Director Norman fucking Clemens, who fucking said, and I quote, control your wife. I don't think he appreciates the fact that I did not fucking slug him.
My mouth hung open. Brilliantly, I said, what?
Control your wife.
He brought his fists together and pressed them against his forehead.
Control your... Fuck him!
Wait, because of the magazine? If Clemens had said that to me, I might have been furious. As it was, I was just horrified that I'd gotten Nathaniel in trouble. Or at the Girl Scout appearance, I didn't... What did I say? He snatched the magazine from the desk.
This isn't the problem, except that he's an asshole and a coward.
You didn't say that to him, did you? The headache I'd been fighting all day spiked and ran a line of current through my right eye.
No.
Nathaniel scowled.
No. I told him I would talk to you, and I am. We're talking.
I'll stop doing interviews. I'll call and cancel things as soon as I get home tonight.
Stop? I don't want you to stop.
But if it's affecting your job... His anger transformed to horror.
No. It's not you. I'm not angry at you. Clemens is the one who's out of line, and it's because what you're doing is working. He spent the majority of the time ranting about how he's getting criticism for not including women in his plans and pressure from some pretty influential people to add them. All of them talked about having seen you or listened to you or read an interview with you.
My stomach churned. I'm so sorry.
You haven't done anything wrong.
But if it's getting you in trouble, I don't want to cause any problems. I held up my hands, but they were shaking, so I folded them in my lap. This was just like being in college again. Every time I stood out, it made someone angry, and now it was causing Nathaniel problems, too. I'll stop. It's fine. I'll stop.
I'm not asking you to stop.
I know, and I love you for that, but still. I swallowed, tasting bile at the back of my throat. The room was too warm, and my headache sent lines of green and white across my right eye. I mean, I don't need to prove anything.
If I keep going, it'll be bad for morale. Distracting. The astronauts don't like having me out there.
Parker asked you to talk to the Girl Scouts. Aside from expressing some jealousy that you'd been on watch, Mr. Wizard, even he admitted that you'd done a good job. In his usual way, I mean.
He watched the show? I was standing. I didn't remember standing. Had everyone seen me on television? My stomach was a fireball of tension and seemed set to launch itself up my esophagus. I tried to catch my breath, but all systems were critical. Tell him I'll stop. Tell Parker that I'll ask Don to invite him next time. I'm so sorry. Tell him I'm sorry. Nathaniel was staring at me like I was some sort of freak. I was messing everything up. His mouth hung open and his brows were drawn together like he'd never seen me before.
Elma,
I vomited, noisily and without discretion. What little I'd managed to eat at lunch spattered in messy chunks on the linoleum floor of his office. Nathaniel flinched back and my stomach heaved again. I managed to make it to the trash can, but the damn thing was wireframe.
Oh, God.
He had me by the shoulders and braced me as I threw up again, sobbing. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Hey, sweetie. No. Shush. No, you have nothing to apologize for.
He smoothed the hair back from my face and kept murmuring at me. I have no idea what else he said. But eventually he got me calmed down and sitting in his office chair. He knelt in front of me, holding both of my hands. I don't know what his face looked like because I was too ashamed to lift my eyes. Somewhere in the back of my brain, a rational part remained screaming at me to pull it together. Or maybe it wasn't rational because it was my mother's voice, sounding mortified.
Elma, what will people think?
I wiped my eyes with the handkerchief. When had I acquired a handkerchief? Oh, it was Nathaniel's. In one of my few early domestic fits, I had embroidered NDY in the corner with dark blue floss. I'm sorry.
No, it's my fault. I should have waited until I wasn't so angry.
Nathaniel squeezed my hands.
Elma, I'm not angry at you. At all. You've done nothing wrong.
I got you in trouble at work. I didn't pay the electric bill, and we were behind on the gas, too. My house cleaning isn't much more than doing the dishes and making the bed. I'm having trouble concentrating at work. If I weren't trying to make trouble...
Okay, stop.
Shh.
He squeezed my hands and rose up on his knees.
Elma? Elma? What's 441 multiplied by 48?
21,168.
Divided by 12?
1,764? My breathing eased a little.
Square root of 1,764.
42?
Okay. Good.
He wiped the tears from my cheeks.
Can you look at me?
I nodded, but gravity seemed to keep my gaze chained to the floor. I used my next breath as propellant to look up. Nathaniel's sky blue eyes were pinched and worried.
I love you. I'm proud of you. I'm sorry for whatever I've done to make you doubt that.
Nothing. I mean... I wiped my eyes with the back of my hand. This is just... I'm sorry.
If I accept your apology, will you stop apologizing?
He tried for a smile, but his voice still cracked with worry.
Tell you what. Let's take the rest of the day off and go home.
No, I don't want to pull you away from work, and Bubbles still needs my help with calculations, and if I'm not there, Mrs. Rogers will have to reschedule people, and I don't want to be trouble. He put a finger over my lips.
We'll stay here then, okay? But I want you to stay in here with me. I need your help on some calculations, okay? Can you help me with those?
I nodded. I could be helpful. That I could do. I could do all the math he wanted.
Good. Now, Elma, here's...
He stood and rooted around on his desk until he found a piece of paper and drew it toward me.
Here's the equipment list for the moon landing. What I want to know is how many launches we'll need to do to get everything there.
I pulled the chair closer to the desk. What type of rocket am I assuming?
The Jupiter class. Unless it's more efficient to do something else.
He rested a hand on my back.
Just sit here and work. I'll be right back.
19.
Births in space held possibility. Psychologist believes man could produce children fit for new environment. By Gladwin Hill. Special to the National Times. Los Angeles, California, September 19th, 1956. The possibility of husband and wife scientist teams voyaging through space and begetting children on the way was seriously cited today at a gathering of leading space scientists.
By the time I'd figured out that the lunar mission could be done with 5 launches using the Jupiter-class rockets, or 2 using the Sirius-class that was still in development, Nathaniel had cleaned up my mess, brought me a lemonade, and I'd realized that he'd given me equations to do so I would calm down. It had been a good choice. The line of equations was clearly either wrong or right. Having that certainty gave me a lifeline back to sanity, I guess. It had been a really long time since I had broken like that. It hadn't happened since before I met him. Not to that degree, at any rate. Now I just had small panics. The desire to flee. Sweats. The occasional vomit session before a television appearance. That train of thought was not going to lead me anywhere useful. I checked the numbers again, and they were beautifully correct. Taking a slow, deep breath, I set down my pencil and looked up. Nathaniel was sitting on a chair he'd drawn up to the other side of the desk. It wasn't designed to be a 2-person desk, so he was hunched over its edge like a worried gargoyle. He had a report in front of him and was tapping his pencil against it as he read. I think I'm okay now. He put his pencil down and regarded me.
Do you want to talk about it?
There's not much to say. He grunted, nodding, and tapped his pencil against the desk.
May I ask a question?
Of course.
If it distresses you, then we'll change the subject.
I said I was okay now. Nathaniel held up both hands in surrender.
Okay. Good.
He set them back down on the desk and cleared his throat.
I understand why you haven't mentioned it, so I'm not upset, just worried. So, can you tell me the due date?
The what? I looked back at the papers. Due date for the launch? That hadn't been in the parameter. And then my brain caught up. I laughed outright. I'm not pregnant.
I don't know if that reassures me or makes me more worried. Are you sure?
I had my period last week. You remember that?
Oh, right.
He rubbed his forehead.
Maybe you are now. I mean, we've been intimate since then.
And more than once at that. That's not how it works.
But you've been vomiting more.
So much for thinking I was being discreet about it. Ah, I didn't know you knew. It's not... I'm not pregnant. That's not what this was. He watched me, and I could feel the question taking shape. It took up space and left little room for air.
Can you tell me what this was?
I dragged in a breath. As much as I wanted to, I could not pretend that he was being vague. Dodging the question would only worry him more. You know how I tell stories about being the youngest in my class? Okay. Well, I try to make them funny stories because that helps. But the truth is that I was... Mama called this having a spell. It didn't happen that often and hasn't happened in years. I was just... I'm sorry. I wish you hadn't seen it.
You understand that I'm just worried about you. Right?
He reached out for my hand. I do.
Mostly. The science part of my brain could describe what was happening.
The anxiety that I get sometimes, I mean, it hasn't been this bad since I was 18. I'd been tutoring one of the boys by request of my professor, and was subjected to 6 months of, my grades would be better if you knew anything about teaching. Being 18, I believed the boy. Being 18, I'd thought that I couldn't quit. I'd told Nathaniel stories about the student, but only as jokes. I never told him about going to the bathroom to sob and then wiping my face and continuing the session. Until one night when I couldn't. All I will say about that is, thank God Herschel was at Stanford, too, or I probably would have... He's a good brother. Never told our parents, although in hindsight he probably should have. It had been exactly the thing that Mama had been afraid of. That I would be too fragile to handle the stresses of going to college when I was 14. I got so good at hiding my distress that I don't think my parents ever knew. I am terrified every time I have to address an audience. You remember Mama and her What Will People Think? He nodded, but otherwise was very still and focused on me. I think... Mama was concerned about appearances because she had married up. I didn't know that. I just knew that I had to be perfect. Always, and I think what just happened is that, well...
Clemens represents what people will think.
Pressing my hands over my mouth, I nodded and tried desperately not to cry again. Crying was weak. It was for children or grief. I was my father's daughter, goddammit. Nathaniel was already worried enough. He didn't need me dissolving again. Nathaniel stood and came around the desk. He knelt next to my chair and wrapped his arms around me.
He doesn't, okay? He called me in today because what people think is that you are smart and brave and funny and kind, and they want to be like you. Do you know what President Brannon said?
I shook my head, my hand still pressed over my mouth.
According to Clemens, President Brannon said that his daughter asked him why she couldn't be an astronaut.
I laughed a little. Oh, that must have been a fun conversation.
And he asked her why she wanted to do that. And she said, I want to go into space with Dr. York and be a lady astronaut like her.
And that was when my attempts to not cry failed. Completely. But these tears were of an entirely different sort and welcome. Nathaniel was crying with me because that's the sort of wonderful man I married. Anyone looking at us would have thought that we were grieving, but it was the happiest I'd been in months.
You know you've worried your husband when he makes a doctor's appointment for you. I couldn't blame him. I was angry about it, but I couldn't blame him. He drove me to the doctor's office and sat in the waiting room. He probably would have come in if I'd let him. Instead, I was sitting in a gown on a cold table with my feet up in stirrups while a man I didn't know did unmentionable things to my nether regions. Really, though, would it be too much to ask that they warm these things? The doctor pushed back his rolling stool.
You can sit up now, Mrs. York.
He had a beautiful Scottish accent, which made his appearance a little less forbidding. Lean and intense, he studied me with pale blue eyes under heavy eyebrows. One focuses on such things rather than the indignities of being a woman. Clearing his throat, he turned away to a pad of paper.
Well, you're definitely not pregnant.
I know. Thank you, though.
Can you tell me a little more about the vomiting?
His nose bent down like a hawk. Vomiting?
Your husband mentioned it when he made the appointment.
I was going to kill Nathaniel. Pressing my lips together, I ground my teeth before forcing a smile. Oh, it's nothing, really. You know how husbands get. He wheeled around to face me.
You have every right to be angry at his interference, but I'll ask that you not use social niceties when I'm inquiring about symptoms. I need to know the frequency and nature of the vomiting to make certain that it isn't related to another matter.
Oh. I rubbed my forehead. The doctor just wanted to know how things were without Nathaniel's misdiagnosis, the same way I wanted to see the raw numbers before they ran through a machine. Not that my husband was a machine, though I was aggravated with him as if he were. It's not an illness. I just get nervous when I have to speak in front of a large group, that's all. It's been happening since I was a teenager.
Just before speaking?
Sometimes after. I twisted the hem of my gown, my head bent.
What other times?
It really doesn't happen very often. I hadn't been preparing to speak this last time. My cheeks burned with shame remembering. But there have been times when I feel
overwhelmed? If I've made a number of mistakes or feel like I'm shirking?
He grunted, but provided no other commentary.
And did anyone ever treat you for it?
I shook my head.
Herschel had wanted me to go to a doctor, but I was afraid that he would say I wasn't fit for university, or tell my parents, which would have amounted to the same thing.
They have shortness of breath at these times. Sweating. Racing heart. Before vomiting, I mean.
My head came up of its own accord. Yes. Yes, I do.
He nodded and pulled a prescription pad toward him.
You have anxiety, which is unsurprising given the age we live in. The papers are calling it the meteor age, but I think the age of anxiety is more apt. I'm going to prescribe Milltown and refer you to...
I don't want to take any drugs.
He lifted his pen from his pad and turned to glare at me.
I beg your pardon.
I'm not sick. I just get upset sometimes. This was exactly why I hadn't wanted Herschel to take me to a doctor. Next thing you knew, I'd be in a sanatorium filled with women getting shock treatment and hydrotherapy for nerves.
It's perfectly safe. This is, in fact, the most common prescription I write.
But I'm fine. I did not want to join the brigades of women taking Mother's Little Helpers.
The doctor pointed his pen at me.
If I had told you that your vomiting was caused by influenza, would you also refuse to take any medicine?
But that's different.
It most certainly is not.
Rolling his stool closer, he held out the prescription.
My dear lady, your body is not supposed to react to stress in this way. You are, in literal fact, being made ill by forces outside yourself. Now, I want you to take this, and I'll give you a referral to my colleague, who can discuss some other therapies as well.
It was easier to take the piece of paper than to argue, so I did, and I thanked him. But I would be damned before I was going to drug myself into oblivion. In the waiting room, Nathaniel was sitting in a chair by the window where I'd left him. His right knee bounced up and down, which it only did when he was really nervous. He had a magazine open, but I'm certain that he wasn't reading it, because his gaze was just staring at the same spot on the page until I walked over. He closed the magazine and rose to meet me.
Are you...
I glanced around the waiting room, which had people in half the chairs. Mothers with infants, women great with child, and men as nervous as Nathaniel. Clearing my throat, I took his arm. Not, as I told you. He rested one hand on top of mine, and his brows were drawn together as if he were trying to solve an engineering problem.
I'm not sure if I should be reassured or disappointed.
I tilted my head. I'm sorry. Kissing my forehead, he released my hand to pull the clinic room door open for me. Cool air rushed in from outside and carried with it the hubbub of downtown Kansas City.
I want you to be happy.
I am. I didn't tell him about the doctor's actual diagnosis, because that was just going to lead to arguments, and this was close enough to the truth. I leaned against him, feeling the wool of his coat beneath my cheek. I'm sorry I worried you.
I've been thinking about taking a vacation.
I laughed. You? The man who dreams in rocket engines. Please.
Not long, but, you know, careful.
Nathaniel steered me clear of a woman running down the sidewalk, clutching a shopping bag. He scowled after her before continuing.
We're going out to California for your nephew's bar mitzvah, so why not make it into a proper vacation? We could stop by JPL while we're out there.
As if stopping by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory was a vacation. I see how you are. Another woman ran past, carrying a bag of flour. Your idea of vacation involves looking at rockets.
Just trying to be efficient.
Mm-hmm. Efficiency is not usually a word I link to vacation. The street got emptier as we walked, and yet the noise of Kansas City seemed to become louder and angrier.
Ha! You're the one who calculates our fuel consumption, even when we're what in the...
I'd already tightened my grip on Nathaniel's arm before we rounded the corner for our streetcar stop. A gang of reporters filled the street. A runaway rocket ignited in my chest, and I twitched back. Cameras, microphones, and... None of them were pointing toward us. A police line stretched across the sidewalk, and on the other side of it, a crowd surged.
The gang of reporters stood just this side of the line, holding their cameras over their heads. Occasionally, the police line would part and let a civilian through. Every time, the reporters mobbed around them. I tugged on Nathaniel's arm. Let's go back.
Hang on, I want to see...
He glanced down at me and stopped with his mouth open. I don't know what he saw, but he nodded.
Yeah, sorry, right.
God damn it. I wasn't that fragile. I relaxed my grip on his arm and nodded toward the police line. Do you want to find out what's going on? He shook his head.
Nah. Let them do their job. We can read about it in the paper tomorrow.
20.
U.S. Capitol, rocked by food riots, by Gladwin Hill, special to the National Times. Kansas City, Kansas, September 22, 1956. The area around the Capitol was cordoned off after rioters, headed by housewives, attacked butcher shops and grocery stores today protesting high prices. They broke into stores and tossed goods onto the streets. At least 50 persons were injured and 25 arrested as the result.
One of the luxuries of our apartment building was that it had laundry facilities in the basement. That was fortunate, as I'm not entirely certain that Nathaniel would have let me go out to a laundromat alone after the food riots we'd seen the day before. Not that there would be laundry riots anytime soon, but still. My husband was a worrier sometimes. Even so, schlepping the laundry bag up 4 flights of stairs left me huffing by the time I got back to our floor. It was tempting to drop the bag and just drag it down the hall, but I kept it hugged against my body, then propped it on my knee between myself and the wall as I unlocked our door. Pushing it open with my shoulder, I grabbed the bag and carried it into our studio. Nathaniel was sitting on the couch with his feet up on the coffee table, talking on the phone.
Oh, hang on. She just came in.
I set the phone down on the table and jumped up.
Let me get that for you.
I relinquished the bag with a sigh. Who's that?
Herschel.
He carried the bag over to the dresser and set it down. Anything wrong? It wasn't our usual day for a phone call. He shook his head, busy with a knot on the laundry bag.
Just wanted to talk to you, I guess.
I sat down on the sofa and picked up the phone. Well, hello. To what do I owe the pleasure? My brother laughed in my ear.
I need a favor.
I'm not doing your math homework.
It's more dire than that.
His voice took on the overly serious tones of a radio star.
It's the most dire thing a man could face and hope to survive.
Dancing? He laughed out loud at that, and I could picture his eyes crinkling until they almost closed.
Worse. Doris's entire family is coming for Tommy's bar mitzvah.
I whistled, which isn't ladylike, but he'd taught me to do it when we were kids, so I figured he wouldn't mind. That is rough. And what's the favor?
Will you come early? To the bar mitzvah, I need...
His voice faltered a little, which made me sit up on the couch.
Ah, hell, Elma. I was planning on joking about it, but I realized that I was going to be... There aren't any other Wexlers. It's just you and me and the kids.
You'd think that at some point the grief would stop. I put my hand over my mouth and leaned forward, as if I could somehow fold over the pain and keep it from escaping into the world again. There might be cousins out there somewhere, but between the Holocaust and the meteor, it was just the two of us. I had to swallow hard before I could speak. Yeah, I mean, I have to check the launch schedule, but yeah, I can come out early.
Thanks.
His voice was a little ragged.
Plus, California has actual food. Nathaniel said you got caught in those riots yesterday.
I let Herschel change the subject and shot my husband a look. He was engaged in trying to figure out how to fold my panties, and it seemed to be taking more effort than a differential equation. That's a wild exaggeration. We had to go to a different streetcar stop, that's all.
He made it sound like you were right in the middle of it.
The police were doing a fine job containing it. I sighed, remembering the gossip I'd heard in the laundry room. Although, it sounds like our favorite market got hit. Poor Mr. Yoder is Amish, and I think he just had to stand there and let them take stuff.
Oof. Well, come out here and we'll pamper you. You need it, eh?
There was a consciousness in the way he said it that made me purse my lips and stare at my husband. What exactly had he said to Herschel before I came into the apartment? To ask Herschel would be to invite him to discuss my well-being, and that was not something I wanted to do. Not now, at any rate. Maybe when I was out there, if there was time around the festivities, maybe. Listen, I should probably go. Nathaniel is about to wrinkle all the laundry.
Give him my best, huh?
Likewise. Same to Doris and the kids. When I hung up the phone, I stayed on the sofa for another moment, with my hand still on the receiver. Did you call Herschel? Nathaniel straightened, lowering my underwear. It might have been funny if his face hadn't been so serious.
Yes.
Did you tell him?
No.
He set the underwear down on the dresser and faced me.
I didn't. I did say that you'd been working too hard.
Don't. I got to my feet and crossed to the laundry bag. The clothes inside were still warm from the dryer as I pulled them out. I know you mean well, but don't. I didn't work all the launches. I was on the maroon team, which rotated in every third launch. Even there, we were further divided into shifts, which rotated to try to minimize exhaustion. Because all stations had to be staffed the entire time astronauts were up. Sometimes, though, even when you weren't scheduled, you wanted to be there. We'd sent an unmanned launch up 3 days ago that Basira and the Green Team had control of, so Helen and I should have the night off. We did, in fact. But this was the flight that was going to circle the moon. At 5 o'clock, Helen came over to my desk and put her purse down on Basira's empty half. It clunked as she set it down, seeming abnormally heavy for a cloth purse. Putting a finger by the last row of numbers I'd been double-checking, I stared at the bag. The cloth seemed to contain a faint outline of a bottle. Nice bag. Refreshments. Helen grinned and patted it. You're staying, right? I nodded and wrote a dash in the margin so I'd know where to start up again tomorrow. Yes, if for no other reason than that it's the only way I'll get to see Nathaniel. He could take a night off. Ha! You've met my husband, right? Not good if he burn out. She drummed her fingers on the desk. What do you think it will look like? I shrugged and stacked my papers. Around us, the other women were wrapping up their work for the day, pages rustling as they slid reports into their drawers. Gray? I mean, there's never been a hint of color in the telescope images, and we won't have really clear images until the rocket gets back. There are still pictures from the moon. Grinning, I pushed back from my desk and stood. I admit that I'd probably stay even without Nathaniel. It was an amazing thing we were doing. We'd managed to program a rocket so that it could do a giant orbit around the moon without a pilot. We hoped. It was different from what we'd be doing later when we sent men to orbit the moon. This didn't involve needing to transfer in and out of orbit, though, because we'd just set up a highly elliptic orbit with the apogee on the far side of the moon. That math was fairly straightforward. I followed Helen out of the room and joined the tide of IAC employees headed for mission control. We wouldn't all fit in, of course, but there was a viewing room, and then, for those of us with the keys, a second control room. Someday we'd have two missions in space at the same time, so they'd built two duplicates of mission control. One of them was in use training the next flight crew, but one was, in theory, empty. Or at least, not in official use. Helen and I peeled off from the main throng and headed to the stairs that led up to the other control center.
Hey, wait up.
Behind us, Eugene and Myrtle Lindholm slipped through the door and into the echoing cement block stairwell. Eugene! I grinned down at them. I didn't know you were coming.
The way Myrtle has been going on about this. If I missed the first flyby, we'd have nothing to talk about.
I must learn her bargaining techniques. Eugene overtook Helen and me on the stairs with no problem.
She doesn't so much bargain as deliver ultimatums.
Don't listen to him!
See?
With a laugh, Eugene turned to look at me as we proceeded up the stairs.
What do you think we'll see? Myrtle thinks it will only be gray.
She's probably right. The pictures are only getting scanned at a resolution of 1,000 horizontal lines, and because we're so far, the transmission is at a slow scan television rate. I trailed off. I just started talking jargon, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. But it's close enough to what we've been doing over in comm, so I've got a decent idea. It'll be fuzzy.
Yep. But we should get better images as the probe swings back toward Earth. We reached the top of the stairs and Eugene opened the door.
Speaking of, how's Nathaniel?
Raising an eyebrow, I nodded at Eugene to thank him as I walked through the door. He's going to love being called a probe. Eugene laughed.
You know what I mean. Is he still as cranky about the IBMs?
According to him, they are an abomination, and he won't consider any manned lunar mission that doesn't include human computers. Which was fine by me, as it increased my chances that they'd have to include a woman. Not that men couldn't do math. It's just that most of them went into engineering instead of computing. The world of numbers on paper didn't seem to have the same appeal as the hardware and explosives of rocketry. Their loss. There were people in this hall, too, but not as many. Most of them were from the Green Team. There were a few astronauts, though. Derek Binkowski and Halim Hot Dog Maloof were leaning over a console, chatting with Parker. Mrs. Rogers was with another knot of people standing near the large display that would show the images from the probe as they came in.
Where do you think we should watch?
Helen stood on her toes, trying to see over the crowd. I scanned the room and spotted some empty chairs near what would normally have been the flight surgeon's desk. Steering our group over there, it was hard to keep my eyes off the big dark screen. This would get us one step closer to the moon. After this, they'd pick a landing site, and then someone would go to the moon. Helen, I'm suddenly delighted that you brought refreshments.
That sounds promising.
Eugene grinned down at her.
Running into you all was definitely the right choice.
Helen patted her bag.
Better than watching baseball.
At the surgeon's station, she pulled out some paper cups and a mason jar filled with her homemade blackberry wine. It was an unctuous beverage, but there were days when sweet and strong were exactly what you needed. Then Helen pulled out some soda water.
Found a cocktail recipe.
Good Lord.
Eugene leaned forward to peer into her bag.
Do you have an entire bar in there?
No ice.
She frowned at the two liquids.
Not cold, so.
Don't need it cold.
Myrtle picked up two cups and held them so Helen could pour.
Just need it strong.
I laughed and took the cup. The bubbles lifted a scent that held the memory of summer warmth. When Helen had hers filled, I lifted mine.
To the moon!
To the moon and beyond.
Eugene tapped his cup with ours. The sparkling water cut back some of the cloying sweetness and brightened the dark fruit.
Say, this isn't bad. Bad before?
Helen narrowed her eyes and gave me one of her patented tisks. Drawn by the promise of alcohol, a couple of engineers drifted over, including Reynard Carmouche. I was a little afraid that he was going to bring Parker with him, but fortunately he was more interested in staying with the other astronauts. Someone had brought gin, and of course, that meant we had to experiment with other cocktail variations. For science. Chemistry is a very important part of rocketry. Holding a gin and blackberry bramble, Helen leaned in to bump me with her shoulder.
Betty asked about you.
That's nice, which is Southern for fuck that. Did I tell you we're going to California for my nephew's bar mitzvah?
She meant well, and she sighed.
All of the she meant well in the world would not make up for that betrayal.
I think I've even talked Nathaniel into taking a vacation. Can you imagine?
He'll probably sit on the beach with a report on orbital insertion.
Maybe you could at least come back to the 99s?
Hey!
A voice from the front of the crowd cut through the murmur of conversation.
It's starting!
I rose onto my toes to see over the heads of the other folks, using the motion as an excuse to step away from Helen, who really did mean well. Maddie had just been interested in breaking into Life magazine, which that visit had done for her. Bless her heart. But none of that mattered today. Today was all about the moon. I took another sip of the sparkling blackberry concoction and let the excitement of the group pervade me. This kind of group I didn't mind. It was just being the center of attention that distressed me. The room quieted, and we began to hear the voices of the people in the main control room. It was like being at a launch run by ghosts. It was weird being on the outside of the main mission control. I was so used to being in that room and doing the math. I closed my eyes for a moment and listened for Nathaniel's voice among the others. Beside me, Myrtle inhaled sharply.
What is that?
I opened my eyes. There on screen, the first grainy images had appeared. It took me a moment to make sense of the grays and blacks flickering on the screen. Over the loudspeaker, Nathaniel's voice resonated through the room.
What you're seeing, ladies and gentlemen, has been rendered in ones and zeros, transmitted through the depths of space, then translated back into an image. This is the surface of the moon.
And like a magic trick, I could see the curve of the horizon. Joy erupted out of me in a cheer. Around me, people jumped into the air like we'd won a race. I guess we had, or at least the first heat of it. I raised my glass to the success of the friendship probe and the team who had planned the mission. Maloof raised his hands in triumph. Mrs. Rogers danced like a girl. Parker punched the air with a hoot. Eugene lifted Myrtle off the ground, spinning her around in a hug, and I laughed and laughed. Me next! Helen punched Eugene's arm, and he chuckled. Eugene picked Helen up and spun her around and around. I stared at the screen, grinning so hard my cheeks hurt. The moon. Someday I would go there. Someday I would walk on the moon. Funny how seeing your goal made manifest can change things. When we started to get the higher resolution images in, the stark beauty of the moon became even more real. Yes, it was forbidding, but there was also a majesty to the austere landscape. I think everyone at the IAC felt a renewed energy for the project. I put my head down and buried it in calculations. But there was another thought that kept running through my mind. It turned out that Bubble's figures were correct. The change in interior structure of the fuel core made it significantly more stable, which in turn allowed it to generate more thrust. With that, we'd be able to increase our payloads by a good 23.5%, which would drastically reduce the number of launches needed for the moon base. Nathaniel was working on a new scenario with those numbers. It was complex enough that he was running our calculations through the IBM, no matter how much he hated it. The program would take hours to run, and he liked to babysit the machine, even when Basira, its actual programmer, was there. It's not like he could fix anything if a punch card failed to feed or something, but men. So, I got another invitation to go on Mr. Wizard. I fiddled with the edge of a discarded punch card I'd pulled out of the trash. When you stacked a couple of them together, the holes from the punch cards let specks of light through and almost sparkled.
Is that so?
Nathaniel looked up from the abstract he was reading.
Have you responded?
I shook my head.
I haven't been to Chicago in a while.
He shifted in his chair.
Maybe we could take a vacation?
You keep using that word. It wouldn't be a vacation if I were working.
Well, a vacation for me, then.
Smiling, I tore the edges of the card into little strips. With the notched corner of the card, the strips almost looked like feathers on a wing. I haven't said yes.
Whatever you decide, I'll support you, no matter what.
I know. He meant it to be supportive, I know he did. But it put the decision squarely on me. Either I would cause strife at work if I continued fighting for women's inclusion in the space program, or I would disappoint Nathaniel.
Oh, he would never say that.
But if he was proud of my success, then it followed that he would be disappointed if I quit. I know that's not a logical progression, I do. Masira sat on the other side of the room, oblivious to our conversation as the compiler rattled. The cards ran through the feeder with a thwick, 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 as each hit the metal guard. I pulled out another card from the trash and flipped it so the notch mirrored the first one. Wings. That was the crux of the matter, wasn't it? Wings and flight and space, and I wanted to go into space in ways that did not make sense even to me. I had a life I should be content with, and I was. I liked being Mrs. Nathaniel York. If I turned down Mr. Wizard and the interviews and the invitations to dinner parties, then I could go back to concentrating on my husband and my job. I loved both, and I could do more. Was I really going to be content running calculations for someone else's ideas? It would remove the immediate stress, true, and leave... what? I curled the leading edge of the wings and held them together so they cupped the air in tandem. Paper planes might be a good project for Mr. Wizard. I could show Rita how to make a wind tunnel. Oh. I lowered the wings, light peeking through the hole punches and little sparkles. Oh. I had been thinking about who I would disappoint. What would people think? But I knew the answer to that. The little girl on the show. The Girl Scouts in their tinfoil helmets. The crayon letter writers. My niece. What would people think? Those little girls thought I could do anything. They thought that women could go to the moon. And because of that, they thought that they could go to the moon, too. They were why I needed to continue. Because when I was their age, I needed someone like me. A woman like me. I'm going to say yes. Nathaniel nodded, watching me.
I'll come with you.
There's a launch that week.
It's a supply launch with construction material for the orbiting platform and unmanned. The team is solid, and I won't be needed for any press conferences.
He stood up, and even though Basira was right there, he came over and kissed me. Nathaniel, what will Basira think?
She'll think that I love you, and she'd be right.
21. Rocket group told of Russian respect. Special to the National Times. Princeton, New Jersey. December 3rd, 1956. The International Aerospace Coalition was told today that the tremendous admiration the people of Russia hold for IAC scientific and technical advances was a key to future understanding and cooperation between Russia and the IAC.
I flew us into Chicago a day early, and Nathaniel did his level best to keep me well and thoroughly occupied until I went to the studio. As much as I'd been wanting him to delegate some of his work, it was odd knowing that there was a launch happening without him. I never thought we would hit a point where rocket launches were routine, but when you have one or two a month, your views change. How about a boat tour? I stopped by a sign for the Mercury Sina cruiser as we crossed over the Michigan Avenue Bridge.
That sounds chilly.
Nathaniel had given up fighting the wind blowing off the lake and carried his hat in one hand. His ears had turned pink with the chill. He was probably right. The wind had been brutal, but in the rare moments when it wasn't blowing, the sun was actually fairly warm, and this was December. The winter might finally be breaking. Of course, then summer would come and never leave. I peered down the stairs toward a boat docked on a walkway right next to the river. Looks like they have an interior cabin. Come on, it'll be fun.
And the fact that it won't have a payphone has nothing to do with your interest.
I tucked my arm into his. The fact that its lack of a phone is the first thing you thought of is rather telling, don't you think? He laughed and turned us to the stairs.
Busted. Sorry, really. I am trying not to think about work.
I know. I patted his arm as we started down to the river. I'd already caught him on two different payphones today. We can go back to the hotel if you'd rather. Shaking his head, he sighed.
They're fine. I'm disrupting things every time I call.
It's so touching when they grow up. The wind wasn't so bad when we got below street level. There were some tourists, mostly folks with kids, but not too many given that it was a Tuesday. We only had to wait behind one couple for tickets. As the gentleman talked to the young man in the ticket booth, his wife turned to smile at us, in that way you sometimes do with strangers in a line. Then she did a double take. I braced myself. No, that's not true. I suddenly developed a fascination with the river, as if watching the water and the scum at its edges would keep me from having to acknowledge someone who had clearly recognized me. Yes, I wanted to change the public perception about women and our ability to be astronauts, but I had not wanted to be a pin-up girl for spaceflight. In my peripheral vision, I saw that the woman was still staring at me. There was the intake of breath as she prepared to speak. A hand reached toward me just a little to try to catch my attention.
Excuse me.
I glanced at her. but tried to look like the boat was now the most interesting thing I had ever seen.
I hate to bother you, only you look familiar.
I shrugged and reached for Nathaniel, except, goddammit, the woman's husband had finished his business at the window and Nathaniel was stepping forward. I put on a neutral smile just so I wouldn't look angry. I must have one of those faces.
Are you Elma Wexler by any chance?
Wexler. At the sound of my maiden name, my head snapped around of its own accord. Yes. Yes, I am. I didn't recognize her. Plump and blonde going to gray, she looked like someone's mother. Probably one of the kids staring at the boat was hers.
I'm sorry, but... Oh, it's been years. I'm Lynn Ware. I lived next door. In Wilmington?
My jaw dropped.
Oh, my goodness. Lynn Ware? Well, Lynn Bromenschenkel now.
She turned, reaching for the man she'd been standing with.
Luther, this is Elma Wexler. York, now. We lived next door to each other for 2 years.
She jumped right in, the way she had when we were kids.
It was the longest I'd lived in one place on account of Daddy moving around.
When she smiled, I could see her 10-year-old self buried under the intervening years. Her nose always wrinkled when she smiled.
Do you remember the mud pie incident? I got in so much trouble for that.
And then the glass house affair when Herschel tripped and split his knee open? Lynn's laugh hadn't changed at all. It burst out of her like the sonic vibrations of a rocket.
Oh, the blood!
She put her hand on her husband's arm.
Honest, it's not as bad as it sounds. It's just, honestly, I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm just so happy to see you.
Neither of us asked about the other's parents. It had stopped being a thing one did at some point. Nathaniel turned from the ticket booth then, our tickets in hand, and we had to do introductions all over again. One of the boys was hers, but he had his nose in a book the entire time. And even if he had seen me on Mr. Wizard, he didn't see me on the boat. As we pulled away from the dock, Nathaniel and I found a space in the inside cabin with Lynn and her husband. I settled into the crook of Nathaniel's arm and watched Chicago roll past outside. The captain's voice crackled over loudspeakers set into the ceiling of the boat.
Afternoon, folks. Take a look on your right and you'll see the Hotel Morano, designed by Jetty Briney. All those round balconies are supposed to remind you of the petals on a tree. And like a tree, it goes underground with a whole network of bunkers that are designed to be warm and inviting. Mind you, I've never been in there, because you have to have a whole lot more ready cash than a boat captain makes.
He laughed at his own joke. I leaned my head back to look up at Nathaniel, who was shaking his head slightly. Probably at the same thought I had, which was that underground bunkers were all well and good if you were worried about another impact, but right on the river? When the temperatures went up again and the water table rose, that was going to be a disaster.
Now we have a real treat for you today. We'll get to go out and cruise around the lake.
The boat slowed as we reached the locks out to Lake Michigan. Nathaniel shifted in his seat to peer out the window to watch the locks in action. He was never going to stop being an engineer.
Huh. I wonder if...
His jaw snapped shut. You wonder if... He cleared his throat.
I wonder if we should have Myrtle and Eugene over for dinner when we get back.
That is not what you were going to say. The corners of his mouth twisted into a wry smile.
No, but allow me this course correction.
Which meant it had been something about rocketry. I patted his thigh in appreciation. That would be nice. Maybe we could have... The captain's voice cut in with just enough volume to make conversation difficult.
Last year we weren't able to go out at all because the lake was frozen solid, but this winter is mild enough to... We'll be able to give you a good view of Chicago and cruise around Navy Pier and Adler Planetarium. Interesting trivia. Did you know that the astronauts are using our planetarium to practice navigation?
Nathaniel and I met each other's gazes and I started to giggle. There's no escape, is there? In mock tones of horror, he said,
The space program is everywhere.
Across the cabin, Lynn's husband grunted,
And a damn foolish thing it is, too.
Luther?
Lynn smacked her husband's arm.
Language?
Nathaniel stilled beside me.
What do you mean? A couple of years of bad weather, and they're telling us we have to go into space.
He shrugged, the flesh of his neck bunching over his collar with the movement.
Even if I believe this nonsense, why not spend the money making things better here on Earth?
They are. I rested my hand on Nathaniel's knee to let him know that I would take this one.
That's why we have rationing. They're trying to eliminate anything that will add to the greenhouse effect. The space program is just one aspect of it.
Eternal winner, please!
Luther waved his hand toward the front window where we were starting to draw level with the top of the lock.
You heard the captain!
I think you misunderstood.